The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 1, text number 22, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on April 11th, 2007, in Hanover, Germany.
So, today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 1. Text number 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Svangna sandarshito dhatra. Dushtaram nishtitirshatam. Kaling satvaharam pumsam. Karnadhara Ivarnavam. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. Purport. The age of Kali is very dangerous for the human being. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. But due to this dangerous age, men have completely forgotten the aim of life. In this age, the lifespan will gradually decrease. People will gradually lose their memory, finer sentiments, strength, and better qualities. A list of the anomalies for this age is given in the 12th canto of this work. And so, this age is very difficult for those who want to utilize this life for self-realization. The people are so busy with sense gratification that they completely forget about self-realization. Out of madness, they frankly say that there is no need for self-realization, because they do not know that this brief life is but a moment of our great journey towards self-realization. The whole system of education is geared to sense gratification. And if a learned man thinks it over, he sees that the children of this age are being intentionally sent to slaughterhouses of so-called education. Learned men, therefore, must be cautious of this age, and if they at all want to cross over the dangerous ocean of Kali, they must follow the sages of the footsteps. They must follow the footsteps of the sages of Naimisharanya and accept Sutta Goswami, or his bona fide representative, as captain of the ship. The ship is the message of Lord Sri Krishna in the shape of Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Ajnana Timaram Dasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale. So this is one of the most wonderful prayers. These are the sweet, sweet words of the sages of Naimisharanya. They are understanding how fortunate they are to have Sutta Goswami there to enlighten them in this transcendental science. They are teaching us the proper mood by which we should accept the association, the mercy, the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. Either, as Prabhupada explains, either Srila Sutta Goswami himself or his bona fide representative. The The spiritual master is described here as the captain of the ship. So the ship is the Bhagavatam, the message of the Lord, but that is captained by the spiritual master. So what is our position? You see, we are meant to be passengers on that ship. Not that we think, well, I don't need a spiritual master. I don't need these teachings. I will simply ply the ocean on my own, you see. I will cross the Atlantic Ocean by my own swimming strength. I am a powerful swimmer. I will swim the Atlantic. Now, granted, there are some powerful swimmers who have been able to cross the English Channel, you see. But has there ever been a swimmer who can cross the Atlantic Ocean, you see? We have never seen such a swimmer. So, the dangerous ocean of Kali, if we compare it to the Atlantic Ocean, it's much more formidable of an obstacle than the Atlantic Ocean. So, to think that I will cross the dangerous ocean of Kali by my own strength, that's absolutely insane. It's absolutely insanity. It's ludicrous. It's preposterous. It's the height of absurdity, you see. To think on my own, you know. I'll just be on my own, practice Krishna consciousness on my own. I don't need to take shelter of a spiritual master, you know. I'll just do it on my own. Well, good luck. That's all I can say. You know, you'll drown, actually. People who don't want to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, they don't make it in Krishna consciousness. They don't. They just don't make it because you can't, the jiva doesn't have that power to cross the difficult ocean of Kali on his own strength. He just doesn't have it. As we gave the example last night, spiritual master is like the bus, the Indian bus and the bicycle rider. You know, he can never pedal fast enough or long enough to get to his destination in this example. But when he takes shelter, when he holds on to the lotus feet of Guru, then he becomes easily carried along by the momentum of the spiritual master. What form do the lotus feet take? Does that mean literally grabbing a hold of the spiritual master's feet? Yes, sometimes it does. The spiritual master will mercifully sometimes allow the students to actually grab his feet. Yeah. Actually, it's interesting to note, and this is not to be duplicated in the modern day, but in the early days of ISKCON, the wild hippies, they didn't know anything. Prabhupada even let them kiss his feet, which, you know, we don't, that is not, you know, that was special mercy from Prabhupada. We don't imitate those early, you know, San Francisco pastimes of Prabhupada. When, you know, we don't do that. But, you know, we follow the standard system. But the point is that we really have to take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And in the Vapu form, those are the feet, literal feet. In the Vani form, those are his instructions, you see. There's a wonderful purport in the Bhagavatam, which it came up one morning when I was giving a class in Tallinn, Estonia. It's the most wonderful purport. And it was really appropriate because I had some disciples there, aspiring disciples, in the audience. It was a perfect arrangement because it described in that purport that one should, whatever instructions one receives from one's spiritual master, one should always meditate on those instructions. And then Prabhupada made it more emphatic. He said one should worship those instructions. And then he made it even more emphatic. He said, and not be distracted by anything else. It's what we call in English language a one-track mind. I know one thing, and that is the order that my spiritual master gave me. You see, whatever instruction he gave me, that's it. That's all I know. I don't know anything else. That's the move. And then Prabhupada added, and try to always successfully execute the order. You see? But even if it seems inconceivable that how could I execute the order, then still one must worship and meditate on that order constantly. Prabhupada is a classic example. He had no idea how he would spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. He was a young householder. He had little kiddies coming up. He was having to, you know, go out and make money. He had to keep his wife happy, you know. He was keeping his customers happy. How am I going to preach Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world? Here I am, a young businessman trying to make my business successful. But he dutifully meditated always. And I must keep that order in my heart. I must think how I can do this, how I can. He always meditated on it. In the middle of all his business activities, mm-hmm. dealing with his customers, dealing with pharmaceutical matters, still he was always thinking, how can I carry out this order that Guru Maharaj gave me, you see. Constant meditation on the instruction. So this is the practical means of how you can actually surrender and take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, you see. You take the instructions he's given you and you embrace those instructions as your very, very life and soul, you see. And this is it for me. The spiritual master has given me this instruction and that's it. I embrace those. Just like you, just imagine you're falling off the edge of a cliff. And on the way, you grab a hold of a branch. Now, how tightly we hold on to that branch, you see. There is hope if you hold on to that branch. Some hikers may come by. You know, it's a hiking spot. And if you call for help, there's a possibility someone can actually save you, you see. So how tightly we hold on to that branch, you see. So that's how tightly we must hold on to the instructions we receive from the spiritual master. We have to hold like that, very tightly. What happens if you let go? Finished. You're smashed in the rocks of Kali. In the canyon below, you see, completely obliterated. In the Kali rocks in the bottom of the canyon. So therefore, if you've been so fortunate to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, then you must take advantage of them. That's the one disadvantage of the modern day ISKCON. In the old days, it was very, you know, clear and simple. There was just Prabhupada, and that was it. Now, in the name of shopping around for a spiritual master, people don't take shelter of any spiritual master now in ISKCON, you see. It's a problem. They use the multiplicity, you know, the fact that there are many spiritual masters, they use that as an excuse not to surrender to any of them. Well, I'm still shopping, you see. And so they don't ever surrender to any of them. But that's not very good. It's like you fall off this cliff, you're flying through the air, and there's all these branches here, you know. And as you're falling off the cliff, you're looking at all the branches. Well, I wonder which one I'll grab a hold of before I hit the bottom of the canyon, you know. Well, I grab this one. Well, I grab this one. You know, that one. Just imagine how silly that would be. You're falling over the edge of a cliff. You're going to be smashed in the bottom, and there's, you know, several branches there. And as you're falling, you're pondering. You're perusing the branches. Should I grab that one? Should I grab that one? But in the meanwhile, you're falling to the... You're going to be smashed on the rocks, and you're just wondering which branch you'll grab a hold of. Just grab one. Grab a branch, whatever is most convenient, grab a hold of that branch and hold on. You see, that's all. It really doesn't matter. All the branches are good. On the Prabhupada tree, there are many, many good branches. Whatever branch is practical, convenient, grab a hold of that branch. You see, that's it. And then you're safe. Otherwise, if you keep thinking, well, this branch, that branch, finished. You're not going to be safe. You're going to be smashed in the Kali Yuga. Rocks below, you see. So in this way, we have to use our intelligence. But the difficulty is, in this Kali Yuga, we're not intelligent. In this Kali Yuga, what is our position? We are madmen. We're crazy people. We're crazy. We're insane, you know. Payanalpa yusha shabya kalavasman yuge manaha sumandasumandamatayo mandya bhagya hupradrita. right here in the same chapter, that famous verse, you know. Very famous verse. Not coming up, but that's the position here in this age of Kali. Pray alpa. Not only in the verse it says alpa ayusha, a very meager duration of life, but it's not only alpa ayusha, it's also alpa medasha, which means meager intelligence. I always laugh because in America, they have a dog food called Alpa.
What?
Alpa.
What is it?
A-L-P-A.
Alpa.
They have a dog food, you know, the canned meat. So whenever I see that Alpa, or whenever I think about it, of course, I don't usually go to that section of the grocery store, but when I think about it, Alpa dog food, I think, yeah, they have Alpa brain, like Alpa dog food brain, you know. So, in the Kali Yuga, not only is it Alpa Ayusha, but it is Alpa Medasa. We have a very meager duration of life, and we have dog food brains also, you see. I mean, we're really, really, you know, in bad shape. We're really, really in bad shape in this age. That's why when the mercy comes, we should just grab it, because, you know, the next minute we may fall into Maya. You know, opportunity knocks once. Sometimes you should just, whatever opportunity comes, you should just grab it. As I think we quoted last night or the other night, when something is auspicious, do it immediately. This is Ravana's advice. After reflecting on his own follies, he said, if something is auspicious, do it immediately. If something is inauspicious, postpone it. You see? So the most auspicious thing, according to Srila Rupa Goswami, Adhau Gurashvayam, the very most auspicious thing we can do, first thing, is take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. It's the first thing we should do. And then after we've done that, then everything becomes so easy. But until we do that, we're facing so many problems and anxieties. It's a thing. I know in my own life how bewildered and confused and deluded I was. Just being tormented by my own mind, you see. I know how bad it was before I finally said, all right, you know, this is my guru. I'm surrendering to him. This is my spiritual master. I have nothing, I have no other duty, I have no other business, I have nothing else, no other agenda now. Except to please him. That's it. You see. Until that moment when I decided that I wanted to eternally, you know, give myself to my spiritual master. Until I came to that point, my life was a mess. It was a royal mess. I mean, it was really, really hell, to be frank. I was convinced I was the most miserable person in the whole world. I mean, I really was convinced. No one could ever understand my misery. All I could do was just, you know, suffer in my own misery that nobody really understood how miserable I was. But when I found my spiritual master, you see, when I understood this is my spiritual master, now I'm giving myself to him forever. That was it. Huh?
Devotees told you to come and you didn't go.
In the beginning, I was very stubborn. I was so stubborn. I had discovered Krishna consciousness on my own, actually, outside of ISKCON. I had stumbled across a Radha Govinda poster in a gift store in downtown Denver. And I got a non-Prabhupada Gita, which had a few verses that were correct. Not all, but there was a few of them that were correct. And I had actually started practicing Krishna consciousness in my own way without guidance from the devotees. And I was convinced that this material world was not for me and I should just go to India and become a sadhu in India, you know, renunciate in India. But on the way, something said, no, you must go to San Francisco instead. Don't go to India. I was on the way to India. If But I turned around and headed the opposite direction. I was going to the East Coast to get a job on a freighter. I mean, who knows? I might have gotten the Jaladutta, but like Brahmananda, not Brahmananda, but Hayagriva and Kirtananda actually went on the Jaladutta. But I had the same idea, to get a job on a freighter and, you know, go to India. That was my idea. But I had headed from Denver to Houston, and I was on the way to New York, but then I got to Houston, and someone said, no, you're going the wrong direction. You should be going the other way, to San Francisco. So I got there. I wandered into Golden Gate Park, and there they were, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. All the devotees, you know, and Hare Nam. But I got sidetracked because I had taken my guitar with me. And I was playing it there in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. And people said, wow, you know, you're another Bob Dylan. You're going to be big, you know. So I got carried away by all this, you know, all the praise. So it took me a couple of years to realize that I wasn't going to be another Bob Dylan. It really wasn't worth being another Bob Dylan either, you know. It took me a couple of years, but I finally got to the point where I was down on my knees begging the Lord to guide me. I was reading the Bible at the time, trying to figure out what I should do, how can I become an enlightened being. And I realized, I found a verse in the Bible that really told me. Christ says, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. And I said, that's it. Now, what does God want me to do? There was no voice from the sky. How will I find out?
Can you repeat what you read in the Bible?
Yes. In the Bible, Lord Jesus Christ says, Father, not may this cup be removed from me, but Father, but not my will, thy will be done. It's there in the Bible. Not my will, but thy will be done. In other words, not what I want, my Lord, but what you want me to do. That's it. He understood that he was going to be crucified the next day, and he wasn't really fired up about it. I mean, if you reform tomorrow, you're going to be nailed to a cross. They're going to jab a spear in your side. You're going to die on the cross hanging there. Would you be enlivened? Probably none of us would be enlivened if we were going to be executed tomorrow, you see. He was saying, my dear Lord, may this cup be removed from me. In other words, may this be removed from me. But if you really want me to do it, all right, I surrender. And see, that was his move. So I realized, okay, that's it. But what does God want me to do? I'm ready and willing and able to do it. Now just tell me what you want. But he wouldn't, there was no voice from the sky. But then I realized, actually, one day I was playing some of my music in front of a vegetarian establishment and a little stage they had out there, but nobody was listening except one little girl, and she saw that I was rather depressed that nobody was hearing me except for her. She said, don't worry, God can hear you. And I went, wow, the Lord can hear me. So I started begging the Lord to guide me, how I can become the perfect servant. And then the devotees came and they told me. And they told me that, you know, Vishnajan Maharaj showed up in town, and by Krishna's grace, it was an answer to my prayer, actually. Krishna sent Vishnajan Maharaj because I was sincerely begging for guidance. And he sent the guidance through Vishnajan Maharaj, who then told me all about Srila Prabhupada and how I should surrender. And of course, in the beginning, I was thinking, no. Stubbornly, I was thinking, I'll just be Krishna conscious on my own without the guru. Mm-hmm. You see, I was thinking, well, George Harrison's doing it. He's writing songs about Krishna. You know, I'll just go around like and sing my songs about Krishna. I've been going around singing songs anyway, but now I'll just make my songs Krishna conscious, and I'll travel around doing that. So I'll be a devotee then. I'll chant Hare Krishna and I'll sing songs about Krishna. That way I'll be a devotee. And I actually moved into the temple just as an experiment, not as a surrender, just to see what I could learn. I told him clearly, I haven't come to join. I'm just here to, you know, see what I can learn. They said, that's all right. But they said, actually, you know, you're not really a devotee of Krishna unless you surrender to the spiritual master. And they gave me that verse, the one we studied last night, Tadvidi Pranipatina. You're not really surrendered to Krishna unless you take a guru. You're not surrendered. And my ego wouldn't agree, but I mean, I couldn't argue. I knew philosophically I was defeated, but still I wasn't going to do it. It took me a little while longer to finally realize that I had to. Finally, one morning, the Radha Krishna Temple album, which had just been released, I was hearing that beautiful rendition, Samsaradava Nadarita Loka. How much love the devotees had in their hearts for Prabhupada. You could sense it in the singing. And that actually pushed me over the edge. Philosophically, I knew that I was wrong according to the teachings of the Gita. But emotionally, I wasn't ready to do it. I wasn't willing to take the plunge, you know, into the ocean of the lotus feet. But when I heard, when I tasted that the nectar, vicariously experienced some of the nectar the devotees were experiencing by being surrendered to the spiritual master. When I actually experienced a little sneak preview, a little drop, a little glimpse of that nectar they were tasting by having fully given themselves to the lotus feet of Sri Guru, then I knew that, I said, actually there's nothing more wonderful than this. I said, wouldn't it be beautiful if I gave my life to Prabhupada? I was just thinking like that. And the feeling I had when I thought like that was the most sublime, sweet feeling you could ever imagine. And I knew the only way I could keep feeling that was to do it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That's when I actually met Prabhupada, mm-hmm. even though I hadn't seen him yet. Mm-hmm. I had turned down the opportunity to meet him in 1969. I refused to go because I thought I was contaminated with Mayavadi philosophy, thinking that I was God. I didn't want to have the Swamiji pop my little bubble, you know. Mm-hmm. And then in 1970, again, the devotees invited me to come to L.A. Mm-hmm. to attend a festival with Prabhupada there. But I wouldn't go because I was still contaminated. But when I became very beaten down with the material nature, and I was just humbly begging the Lord to save me, you see. That's when the devotees came. And again, it took me a while because I was a stubborn, false ego vadi, you know. Very stubborn, false ego vadi. So, when I realized that actually that's where the nectar is, you see. When one surrenders to the spiritual master, that's when one really tastes the nectar. When the anxiety goes away and you enter an ocean of unlimited nectar. So, any questions? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sankarshan Prabhu, for this enlightening class. My question is, like, you said one should meditate upon the instructions, the vanis of the spiritual master. Now, as we see in our daily life, sometimes we have certain obligations, like either you have a family or you have your business or your job, which you also have to care for. Sometimes it appears very hard to keep the instructions really in the heart and see, okay, now I have to do this, now I would like to do this. So how can we kind of bring this together, these mm-hmm. two sides?
Oh, you have to find a way to dovetail what the other activities you're doing into your Guru Seva. You have to. Mm-hmm. You have to make it all one thing, really. Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that I go to my job to earn my livelihood to maintain your household, my Lord. Mm-hmm. You see? Yeah. You really have to dovetail it all into bhakti. Mm-hmm. You have to. Okay. You can't have some separate thing going. Mm-hmm. Really, you can't. Mm-hmm. Even though there are two rails, vidyam chavidyam yashtadveda bayam saha, as described in Ishapanishad, mm-hmm. the ultimate issue, it becomes the train becomes a monorail train.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it ultimately becomes one rail only, and that's devotional mm-hmm. service. So you have to see how to offer everything you're doing to Krishna, mm-hmm. so you feel connected in every step.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever instruction the spiritual master has given you, you have to find a way that everything you're doing is channeled into that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you have to make some adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be bewildered, confused, you're not going to taste the nectar.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're working job, that's a simple one. Job means money. So you have to spend all the money for your guru, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, spend all the money in the way that the spiritual master will be pleased with you. That every penny you're spending, if you're not directly giving it to him, at least then you must be spending it in such a way that he's very pleased with you. Sometimes householders would say, I'm going to give all the money to Prabhupada. He'd say, no, you keep the money, you spend it for Krishna. You see? So job means money. So job, the result of job, every penny must be spent in a Krishna conscious way. And then it becomes meaningful. And then you have to have, every day before you head out for the office, you have to see that your spiritual battery is fully surcharged. Don't just, some people just get up the last minute, throw some breakfast down their throat and go to work. They chant their rounds here and there, and there'll be a clicker, which makes it even more difficult. Because Prabhupada says again and again, chant on the beads. Actually, Tamal Krishnamurti one time said, he said, any rounds chanted on the clicker don't count. They don't count. That's pretty heavy, but
yeah.
Tamal Krishnamurti is known for heavy statements, but he one time said, they don't even count. So the idea is to, chant rounds at home when you can chant on your beads nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Chant very good quality rounds. Do the austerity of getting up early. Chant your rounds nicely. You can always take a little nap here and there later on. See, the idea is have a very, very powerful surcharged morning program.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will enable you to connect everything you're doing with Krishna throughout the day. It might be at school, it might be at work. So much mundane association, it makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have, just like you wouldn't leave the house if your mobile phone wasn't charged, why do you want to leave the house if your spiritual batteries aren't fully charged, you see?
Mm-hmm.
An important call will come in, you'll miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say somebody just chants half their rounds before they go to work, then about halfway through the day they'll lose their Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to chant all your rounds in the morning, and then you'll be surcharged for the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
Why chant half my rounds in the morning and run out of my spiritual steam halfway through the day?
Mm-hmm.
Chant 16 quality rounds in the day. Why 16? Because 16 is the minimum battery charge that will keep you going 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's why 16. They might always know, why 16?
Mm-hmm.
You see, 16 will keep you, is enough spiritual charge to keep you going through the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's why 16 is the minimum. Any other points, questions?
In the Ramayana, there is one interesting story told of the service Hanuman was doing to Lord Ram, and it was considered third class or first class service because he was doing even more. Maybe you can explain this a little more in details, how we can also endeavor to get on a higher state of service to the Guru.
He was considered to actually be even exceeding Lord Ram, Prabhupada explained. Lord Ram had to use the ocean, the bridge to cross the ocean, but Hanuman, without any bridge at all, he crossed in Lanka without a bridge. So, his service was that... So the question is, how we can be a first-class servant?
Yeah, how can we make better progress in...
Yes, in the same vein that Hanuman in some ways actually exceeded Ram. Prabhupada told us like that. Prabhupada ordered this. He says, I have done 10 times more than my spiritual master. Now you must do 10 times more than me. That's first class servant, you see. Whatever your guru has done, now if you can accomplish 10 times more by his potency, that is the top class service. So, as Prabhupada has made 10,000 disciples. Now it is up to his disciples. You see, they must make 100,000 disciples each. And the grand disciples, you must bring at least 1 million devotees to this movement, you see. So, in this way, you must think how you can bring at least 1 million people to this movement. And that way you will become fully in the heritage of Hanuman. You can bring 1 million people to this movement. Yeah. You must think like that. How in my lifetime can I bring at least 1 million people to this movement?
Yes. The job of the meditation also, how can it be applied in our life as preachers? I mean, I'm trying to do also
preaching. You must preach. So how will you make 1 million devotees, you see? You'll make 1 million devotees if you're very, very pure. So you have to do everything in such a way that to maximize your preaching potency. Your every thought must be pure, purely Krishna conscious. Your every word must be purely Krishna conscious. Your every action in all times, places, and circumstances. In this way, you have to train yourself how to become a true acharya, you see. One acharya can actually deliver the whole world. So, do you think there was only meant to be one acharya? This is one of the foolish things these Ritvik these Ritvik devotees, this is one of their... the foolish things that they propound, there's only one acharya to the movement. But actually, Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, he said, now we are 10,000, then we will be 100,000, then we will be 1 million, and then we will be 10 million. He said, there will be no scarcity of acharyas. So if you want to truly be first-class servant, to be the best possible servant of your beloved spiritual master, then you must become an acharya. That's what you must become. You must become an ideal Vaishnava in all ways. Even the most subtle aspects of your personality must become acharya-ized. Acharya-like. Become an acharya in every possible way. That's what you really want to be first class. You can't do it. You have to become an acharya. Ideal Vaishnava, everything. Your attitude must be Vaishnava in all ways, even the most subtle aspects of your psyche must be completely Vaishnavic. So we have a lot of work to do. We're coming out of very contaminated backgrounds. We have a lot of work to do. But you know what? It's exciting. It's a struggle, no doubt. I mean, we got the personality of Kali has been camping out in our heart for me, for quite a while. And, he doesn't want to facilitate us becoming ideal Vaishnavas. But we have to be stubborn. We have to really be stubborn to not give in, to kick him out. He's a bad roommate, It's a bad roommate. We've got to kick out Kali. Nope, get out. See. I have my spiritual master has given me this order that I must become a pure devotee of Krishna. I must become ideal Vaishnava. So that's it. I have nothing else to think about. No, I have no other consideration. Everything I'm doing should be done in that spirit. You see. In this way, you'll become first-class servant of your beloved spiritual master. Be able to render him the best service. You see, your duty is to serve whatever the mission that he has personally inherited from his spiritual master. Your mission is to facilitate his successfully carrying out his mission. Your mission is his mission. So you must see how I can make my spiritual master successful in his mission. The more you can do that, the more you're top class. Questions, Mark? All right.
Many times we hear about this question: choose the guru in ISKCON.
How to get?
Choose the guru.
ISKCON, okay.
Because there is so many, but seeing in the Bhagavatam when Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to leave the body, then there were so many great sages all around the world. They came there, all around the universe. They came there. But as soon as Sukadeva Goswami, there was no doubt, even everybody just accepted him. So isn't that the guru comes by Krishna's grace?
Well, that's an interesting example. That's a very interesting comparison to the situation in ISKCON, because there were so many gurus there, and which one should I follow?
Thinking about which one to follow.
Yeah.
And Sukadeva Goswami, nobody knew who is he, but as soon as he came, they accepted him.
That's amazing. As soon as Sukadeva appeared on the scene, it was obvious. I mean, everyone knew, you see. When they were all great spiritual masters. One was saying that you should do like this, and I said you should do like this. But when Sukadeva appeared on the scene, all talk stopped, and everyone knew this was it. This is the person. Yeah.
So isn't that the way when the spiritual master comes first in contact and starts instructing? Is that the way to pick up and take the guru?
By obvious.
Yes.
The obvious. Yes. That Krishna has arranged, and this person has now come, and everyone. It's just obviously. Intuitively understood, like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's something like, you know, that I feel that I'm very qualified to choose the guru.
Yeah, Maharaj Parikshit didn't sit there and think, well,
more
which one?
Than the spiritual masters.
He wasn't thinking, well, which one should I, which one? He was just in the mood of, all right, you know. We can actually read the slokas, how he spoke them, the wordings, but it's not that he went around and interrogated all the different spiritual masters. He was just there fasting to death, waiting for guidance on what should be done. And when it became obvious when Sukadeva came in that he was the one that would guide him. And that way it happened. Yeah. It's a very good example. Because this is one of the most popular questions I get all over the world. How do you choose a guru?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a popular question. I must have been asked this dozens of times.
Dozens of times, doesn't it?
Huh?
On the emails, in the questionnaires.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hundreds of times even. And I've been answering this question for years. I'm always looking for the best way to answer it so people can understand, and all their confusion can go away.
So Draga depends on the creeper of Krishna, actually, that he will send you.
Mm-hmm.
So Draga depends on the creeper of Krishna, that he sends you the right guru for you.
Well, Krishna will send you the right guru. When you're ready, if you want a bogus guru, Krishna will send bogus also. If you want to be cheated, Krishna will give you a cheater. But if you're really serious that now I really want to surrender to Krishna, I want to stop this nonsense... trying to enjoy the material world, mood that I've been in, this lusty, angry, greedy spirit of enjoyment, you see. I realize that it doesn't really satisfy me, so now I really want to get serious and fully surrender myself to Krishna, just like in my case. When I finally realized, I was going to the temple, I was going to the Mayavadis. When I was in California, I was going here and there and everywhere. I would go to hear Timothy Leary, I would go to hear, because I wasn't serious. But when you're really serious, then Krishna sends that person. That's what happened to me. When I was there praying, then Vishnu John Maharaj came. You know, and there was a knock on the door, And Krishna sent. So all the person really has to do is become serious. Now I really want to surrender. I'm serious about surrendering. And when that happens, then Krishna will send the spiritual master, all right, this is it. Krishna has sent this person, and that's it. That's another way of understanding it. Yeah. Good point. Mm. Questions, Mara?
But sometimes it's still when Krishna sends us something.
He sends
so many. Yeah, he sends us, but because we have our false ego, and we do not want to accept.
That's right. That happened to me, too. I mean, I was there with Mukundlal in Telegraph Avenue in California. He's invited me to come and meet with Prabhupada, and I wouldn't go because I still had my enjoying mood. That's right. If you have the enjoying mood, you'll always remain confused. That's the thing.
And even the spiritual master sitting in front, we don't want to accept.
Yeah.
Because our false ego is
What's that?
Huh? Even if the spiritual master is sitting in front of us.
Yeah, that's a fact. If you have the enjoying mood, if you have the enjoying mood, you'll never... Well, we can even elaborate further. If you have the enjoying mood, you'll never really enjoy. That's the real reason why we should give up the enjoying mood, because the enjoying mood prevents us from enjoying, actually.
Yeah.
You see, what is your position? You're not actually the enjoyer.
Mm.
We are falsely thinking, I'm the enjoyer. And we try to enjoy that, being the enjoyer, but as soon as you do that, you get set up sukha, dukkha, happiness and distress. So what you have to come, if you actually really want to enjoy, then you have to go to a higher level where you think, no, I am not the enjoyer. I am meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Everything I do should be for His pleasure. And that translates to I should be enjoyed by the spiritual master. Everything I, because He represents Krishna, everything I do should be for the pleasure of my guru. I must please the spiritual master. So as soon as you take that mood, I'm not going to act for my own enjoyment from now on, I'm just going to act for the enjoyment of the spiritual master. That's when you actually enter into the realm of transcendental enjoyment, where you experience unlimited, ever-increasing enjoyment for all of eternity. Is it? So why torture yourself by foolishly continuing an enjoying mood? You're just torturing yourself. You know, like, what is the example given by Narottam? You know that example? Cutting my throat. Drinking poison, yeah. Narottam Das Thakur. He says, I'm Hari Hari Bipale Janamogonainu. You see. My dear Lord Hari, not taking you, I'm simply drinking poison knowingly. You see. So we have to kick out, as Prabhupada always said, kick in the face with the boot. We have to kick out this enjoying spirit. It's our enemy. Stop trying to be the enjoyer, you see. Just try to be the humble servant of Krishna and Guru. And as soon as you do that, wow, you enter into a whole other dimension, the ocean of the nectar devotion. You're surfing in the waves of Lord Chaitanya's mercy for all of eternity, you see. We've seen the sufferers, the surfers in Hawaii. We've seen them in Los Angeles, we've seen them in Australia. They simply want to enjoy the waves, you see. But actually, they never find a way that they can enjoy very long, and then they call it wiping out, where they're thrown off the board and it hits them in the head, they get a concussion, or a shark bites them, or so many things, you know. They're trying to enjoy. So therefore, they're not surfers, they are sufferers, you see. But we have a wave that you can actually ride eternally, and that is the wave of Chaitanya's mercy.
Mm.
Catch that. The surfers have a saying, catch that wave, you see. So we agree, yes, catch that wave, but don't catch one of these puny little ridiculous material waves of enjoyment. Catch the wave of Chaitanya's mercy, and then you will ride forever surfing and sporting in the waves of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Yeah.
A few weeks ago, you wrote one very nice letter in your e-course to one person who cancelled the e-course, and he was kind of a little criticizing. It's so boring. And you answered very nicely, actually, that Krishna consciousness is not something for passive people. You have to become active.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you won't never feel the bliss. Otherwise, everything will become boring for persons who just want to enjoy this. Maybe this goes in this direction, which you've just been explaining. Maybe you can take this even further.
Some people think that Krishna consciousness is very nice. It's a very nice spectator sport, you see. I can sit and watch it for hours, you see. But no, if you actually want to taste the real nectar, you have to get out on the playing field, you know, and do it yourself. You have to dive into it. We have many casual, you know, participants in our movement who they like to see the devotees. That's wonderful, they're doing that, but they don't want to do it themselves. They're keeping themselves a little distant, more like a casual observer than a participant. But that doesn't really satisfy the soul, to remain a casual observer. But it really, because those people come and they go, but someone who really dives into the process, hook, line, and sinker, as they say, who fully dives into this process, they will taste the nectar. They will taste a nectar which goes beyond this material existence. It goes beyond the gross body, beyond the subtle mind, beyond the subtle intelligence, beyond the false ego. They will taste the actual ananda, the spiritual dimension. You see, someone who actually dives in and embraces this process as his or her very life and soul. You see, they will taste the sweetest nectar. And that nectar will just go on increasing eternally. So we invite all of those persons who are now casual observers of this process. That's right, you've been enjoying watching Krishna consciousness. Now, dive in. You see, you've been observing it for some time. Now, you've been on the periphery out there, observing it for quite some time. Now, come out of the bleachers, come down to the playing field, and let's play. Come on. Let's play ball. Actually, we're playing this is the ultimate ball game. Sometimes we see devotees now, we're getting bored with Krishna consciousness, so they take to basketball and football. They get, you know, that means they've really lost the essence, because Prabhupada told us that that's a violation of the regulated principles in Los Angeles. He said, this ball, that ball, it's a violation of the fourth regulated principle. Ball game, yeah. To play these mundane ball games is a violation of the regulated principles. So what is the ball game that we play then? Because everyone likes to play ball, you know. So what are we going to do? Well, we have a very big ball game going on here, you see. Right now, there is a very big ball game. You know that big, the ultimate ball game? I'll tell you what it is. You know the planet Earth? It is a big ball, you see. And there are two teams, and they are fighting to control that ball. Just like in a football game, you know, two teams are fighting to control the ball. So there are two teams fighting to control the big ball, the asuras and the suras, the demons and the devotees, you see. So there is one very powerful team of devotees. It is called the Sankirtan movement. You see, they are fighting to get the. And I, when I was a kid in high school, I used to go to those football games. There was one chant we chanted: "Get that ball! Get that ball! Get that ball!" You see, because once you have the ball, then you can score points. When the other team has the ball, you're just trying to keep them from getting points. But when you have the ball, then you can score the points. That's the way American football works. So we used to chant, get that ball, get that ball, get that ball. So actually, this is our chant in Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada told us, he said that the world is being managed by rogues and demons. He said, now you make your life successful and you take the management. So we are actually meant to get the ball of the present day world civilization. We are meant to bring that, to steer that world civilization into Vedic culture. You see, that is what we are meant to do. Every government, every university, every church, every civic organization, and every single institution on this planet should become Krishna-oriented. So this is the ultimate ball game. You want to play ball? Hey, come on. Play ball with us. Join the Sankirtan movement. You see, play ball with us. You'll love it. There's no ball game like this one. Not some, you know, stupid little ball. You know, this is the future of the world. This is world history we're talking about, reshaping world history. Come on, play ball with us.
Srila Prabhupada said, preaching is the essence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing. It gives most pleasure.
It's the ultimate. Anandam buddhi vardhanam, increasing the ocean of bliss. So, any other question? So, you're ready to play ball? Yes? You're ready to play ball? Come on. All right, then, we'll stop here. Nandarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.